Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe Ferrero Rocher je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,99 Euro. Außerdem Mionetto Prosecco Spumante Doc je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 5,99 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Those Conspiracy Guys. This time we're talking about some true crime, some nasty shit coming on from the West Memphis 3. And joining me in the studio, podcaster, former radio celebrity and comedian, and producer of a brand new up and coming podcast called
Project 10.
Cormac Moore in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Cormac.
Hello, thank you very much for having us on, Gordon.
Absolutely, man.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us more about Project 10, man.
It's a documentary-style podcast series. There's like 10 episodes in Project 10, hence the clever name. It kind of covers everything from legalizing drugs in a country, would it reduce violence, to influencer marketing, to automation, which was one of my favorite episodes, which was looking at, you know, are robots going to come and take your jobs?
Did you make that one yourself?
No, I got a robot to do that. Cool. Outsourced that completely.
Yeah, that's why. Welcome why to the to podcast.
Hello, good people of podcast land. So it's out, P10 Podcast Online. If you're a fan of a podcast, which you obviously are, and might be a fan of a kind of documentary stylish one.
Yeah, I think this one is, it's like a little bit of fact, a little bit of voiceover, a little bit of interview interspersed. Nice pace. If you want some facts and you want some like clearly defined insight into these different things,
fun.
But yeah, Project 10 is a definite go download, that one. Project10podcast.com is the
correct
website.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
on Twitter you're at P10podcast.
Yeah,
so at P10,
that handle will get you Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. So cool. It covers all the bases.
And your own personal one then is at Cormac Comedy. You are a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, well, you know, debatable.
Shaking your dick around now and again.
Yeah, I stand up on stage and give out to people and hopefully they'll laugh.
You've been all around the world, right?
Yeah, well, gig recently this year over in Malaysia and Australia and Thailand and all those places.
That's pretty sweet, like, to say you've done...
Yeah, yeah.
Three continents.
Yeah, yeah. You get to say globe-trotting comedian. Went over, saw some friends and relatives in these countries and did some gigs over there.
Have you done America yet?
Have not done America yet.
Right,
no.
We have to conquer the West, man. That's what we got to do. And you were on radio as well. You were doing breakfast shows all up first thing in the morning.
Which was horrible.
It's tough, man.
Not gonna lie, because I think I'm probably like you. I'm more naturally a late night person. And yeah. I get better stuff done late night and in the evenings. And
I getting think it's because everyone else is asleep.
You're a bit of quiet time. You don't have to deal with anyone.
Yeah.
No one's coming in and small talk. Like, I hate small talk.
You're not afraid of we just continue with the show, so.
No, let's go.
We you don't have to be worried in case the postman is going to come and ring the doorbell and you're like, oh, human contact.
Yeah, I know. It's nice. And I'm just not built to get up early in the morning. So I was doing that for a couple of years. And it's just horrible. Yeah. You know, and you never get used to it. You know when you get an early, like Ryanair flight, an early kind of red eye.
You stay awake all night and go, that's what I do.
But you know when you do get to sleep.
I can't get up, like.
But you know when you do go to sleep and you have that panicky thing that you think the alarm clock isn't going to go off and you keep checking the phone every hour so you don't get any sleep at all. That's what it was like for a couple of years because you have to get up at stupid o'clock and every time, oh my God, what? Oh yeah, it's only 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, high fine. Stress. Well, that's why you probably get tired in the afternoon and do a bit of cocaine.
Well, standard practice, standard. Really. You know
absolutely,
what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's call a spade a spade here.
So, we're going to be talking about the West Memphis 3 this time. If anything that we say on the show evokes any kind of outrage, you want to write it down on a piece of paper, roll it up really tight and poke it up your arsehole. If you want to get in contact with us about any opinions or anything that we mentioned in the episode that may be incorrect, I do reserve the right to be wrong, but we do like corrections over at Those Conspiracy Guys. The facts matter, people. fake news. You can get us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have a Reddit r/ those conspiracy guys. We also have a website, which I will be putting up the documentaries that we're going to be talking about, and this, like West of Memphis and these kind of ones that were put up a few years ago on Netflix. I think you can get them on YouTube, but we're going to be putting them up on our VidMe, which is vid.me/ those conspiracy guys. I'm kind of leaning away from YouTube at the moment. We got a couple of spanks.
They don't like you. You're getting in trouble with YouTube.
Got a couple of spanks, bro. And got a couple of community guideline strikes there that wasn't really pleasant for the Sandy Hook episode and a 9/11 episode. I mean, like...
You're just triggering too many people.
Is it people complaining? I don't know.
You're triggering too many people.
I appealed, they said no, and I don't think they were in poor taste or anything like that, but if that's the way it's going to be on YouTube, they've switched off my live streaming. They switched off my ability to embed videos and stuff.
Maybe you've just insulted one person
who happens to work
at YouTube, and it just has the button for your channel is like off. That Gordon guy, he can go screw himself.
With great responsibility comes... Great power. I think it's the other way around. But yeah, I mean, that one person shouldn't be allowed to dictate the taste of the world. We'll talk about it again, I guess. And we are also on Discord. So if you want to chat with us and the lovely people over at our Discord server, the link is going to be in the description below, or it can be found on the Twitter page or the Facebook page as well. And we also have an anchor where we will be asking what you think about what happened to poor little Stevie Branch and stuff on this, where... you can leave it. It's like a cool voicemail. We'll put up some stuff, and then you put up some stuff, put some music in between. We can answer each other back, and everybody gets to listen to it afterwards then. It's awesome. Also, we have another sister podcast called Why Press Play. It talks about movies, TV shows, and computer games, and we do reviews and play-alongs and watch-alongs and stuff like that. And I think Cormac is on is going to be on one of the shows very, very soon, if you want to head over there.
Exciting.
We're talking about the J.J. Abrams movie Super 8.
Yeah.
So you can go and check that out over there. Vid.me/ those conspiracy guys is where we're going to be hosting all our videos. So head over there instead of YouTube and subscribe to that. Now, there'll be loads of stuff put up there, like all the vlogs are going to be up there. Loads of documentaries. All the documentaries I've been promising for weeks and weeks and months and years. I couldn't really put them on YouTube. They cannot get on getting taken down. So vid.me is pure sound, and it means I can embed them into the website, thoseconspiracyguys.com, and you can look at them with all the other stuff. There is a mailbag video on the way as well. Sorry if you've been sending emails. It's been stupidly busy. I haven't got back to some of you replying to me on social media as well. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. So we're going to get into this now. The West Memphis 3. This shit was fucking wild, right?
Deep breaths. Because this was one... I think I watched this after... just heard about the story after I'd gone through my whole making a murderer binge, right?
And Netflix started throwing you up some shit, right?
But it was weird because I think everyone got... That exploded this whole... at the same time, Making a Murderer was out. Serial came out.
Yeah, true crime
stories. Serial came out and blew all that up. And then everything else was like... and I stumbled upon West Memphis 3. And I know there's a couple of documentaries about that. There's the Paradise Lost ones, and there's a couple of West of Memphis, the newest one.
Paradise Lost is like, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's kind of like an anti-propaganda one, and then West of Memphis is like, no, they didn't do it.
And then there's so many odd little news features, you know, like 15, 20 minute features, and even 5 minute features that are all over the
60 minutes did a thing on it. Dateline, not Dateline, but
so there's tons.
Is it Dateline did one? Yeah, like
tons of stuff about
exploratory
it.
Documentaries.
And it's so annoying because now, you know, I've watched all those.
Yeah.
There is. Have you seen the confession tapes that have come out on Netflix now?
Yeah.
And it's just like America, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, some shit is going on in the legal system in a lot of these like towns.
I wouldn't even say the legal. It seems to be just a lot of the police forces. Now I know, okay,
but that's what I mean in the
whole justice system over there,
justice community. There's a lot of corruption. Maybe there's a lot of. I think in the case of Stephen Avery and stuff like that, a lot of like I think incompetence. That led to corruption to cover the incompetence.
Yeah, I mean...
So someone stupid did something, and then they told someone smart who was going to get in trouble for that stupid thing.
Oh, fuck.
And then the smart person fixed it. But, like, we like to adhere to Hanlon's razor here on the show,
on those conspiracy guys,
which is don't attribute to malice anything that can be explained away with stupidity. Like, if somebody's going to do something stupid, more than likely it was a stupid thing, not somebody trying to fucking do something awful.
Yeah.
But, like, the way the police treated these young lads...
Horrific.
They needed, like, they needed a scapegoat. They needed someone to go down for it.
It doesn't, like, I was thinking about this earlier on, right, and I was trying to figure out, obviously the story is three young boys from a small town in Arkansas go off playing on their bikes one day, and then they turn up after a big search through the whole town, brutally mutilated and murdered.
Yeah.
And then the town, as you said, is looking for, obviously there's, like, if you're a police
justice.
Officer,
when
something like that happens, there's obviously, if you're, me and you are investigating that, we want that to happen. We want to shut that down as quick as possible because you have the fear of a threat of someone out there who is a murderer.
Who's still doing it.
And you're like, okay, they're still out there. There's three kids have been died. This is a disgusting person we need to send. This is, and you know, it's claimed that the small town that they're in is a very evangelical Christian Bible Belt kind of, you know, it's Arkansas.
Yeah.
That's where Hillary and Bill are from. I don't know. Yeah. So I wonder where it's all coming out now.
A little bit backwoods, a little bit country.
Maybe Bill and Hillary did this. Where were they at the time? You know, you wouldn't know.
Strike three more down on the body count, lads.
But it's kind of a weird one where it's another one of those stories where the police just, I imagine some of them want to solve the case genuinely.
Yeah.
On top of that, there's a massive pressure from everyone in the town who knows you personally to go, do your fucking job and will you find the killer, because we're all terrified. And then they go and they have their, get the job done.
The weakest link is like the motivations of local police officers who are, at the end of the day, just men. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the media at the moment about, like, you know, pigs, you know, pig frying like bacon, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Police brutality, police corruption, like, you know, black incarcerants being overly, how would you say, disciplined in police custody and ended up getting, like, severely injured or even dead. Lads being bet and left in a cell to bleed to death, and like prison guards. And
it's a really bad time for American police.
Really,
like,
bad,
hugely
time.
Bad time.
And this is done in 1983, so this is like nearly, it's 25 years next year.
Shit.
when those guys disappear, like, that's a fucking long time, man, you know. And the lads spent the best part of 20 years sitting in a jail cell.
Yeah, yep.
Lost all their 20s, most of their 30s, and all for the fault of, like, a couple of corrupt cops who wanted to just plant some evidence. Or was it? Because you know, we started looking back into it afterwards and going, maybe it's not, you know. Like, in 2007 and 2008, there was a re-examination of it, and there was another one in 2013. Like, West of Memphis is a reasonably new documentary.
Yeah.
It still doesn't account for some of the stuff that we'll say, like the knife in the lake, and we'll talk about stuff later on, the blue twine around the body and stuff like that, which could kind of indicate that they did do it.
And I often wonder as well when, you know, I'd love to follow up with how many people have been exonerated actually did it. Do you know what I mean?
This is the thing, like, Stephen Avery is this absolutely landmark case that hit the media, and they're doing a second season of it now, but you could see how the witnesses were tainted, how his young nephew, who was, like, borderline, you know, mental, special needs, like, mentally disabled or whatever, and he was convinced and cajoled into giving, like, a false testimony, and these lads ended up going to jail after being in jail for 18 years. But you can see the narrative, the way the documentarians played it out, where he was wrongfully incarcerated because they had even when a guy came to confess to the crime, they just swept under the carpet.
Yeah.
Wrongfully incarcerated, he was going to sue the police force. The police force was going to get a big black eye and lose a lot of money. So they were like, right, we have to get something to pick him, you know.
Discredit him.
Found a murder that was just so happened to happen. Or did they orchestrate it? Like, where does the culpability stop?
Do you think Avery did it?
That's the thing.
I think he did,
like.
And then the reason is because of, I don't think the cousin or the nephew did it. I don't think Dassey did it.
Brandon Dassey.
Or at least I think he was the type of person you could, like in this case of the West Memphis 3, the lesser intelligent one could be coerced into giving, or pressurized into giving a statement.
I don't think they did it the way he said they did it in court, but he definitely could have done it. And there are loads of theories out there that say he did.
But it's just when you say about how the documentarians frame it, and one of the most, I think when you watch these, and I watched the first one when I was so angry and upset and emotional, kind of going, you fucking assholes, putting an innocent man away. And it's very easy to always take the side of the underdog and to hate the authority, because that's, you know, it's the rebel in you always wants
Absolutely.
To say, screw you, this guy is innocent. But then one of the things, I think it's very hard to become aware of, it's how propaganda works, is that it's what they're not showing you is more important than what they are. And it's very hard to figure that out, because they can show you this frame, but if they've deliberately left stuff out, oftentimes you're not going to know about that ever. So it can never come in to question your view on things.
The Stephen Avery case, as it was made in the documentary, we get into West Memphis 3, but this is kind of like the preamble to the justice porn that made the West Memphis, that catapulted the West Memphis 3 into the spotlight, because these were, like, as soon as Making a Murderer was over, people wanted that, like, false incarceration jizz kind of story.
That's exactly it.
They were like, oh, give me some more people who got released because they didn't really commit the crime. And they're not making any about, you know, these guys who were spending 8-9 years in jail for a false rape accusation.
They're
not making any of those fucking documentaries because
the right time.
The world would set itself on fire. People are all like, you can't do that because you'll delegitimize rape claims the world over and stuff. You're like, yeah, but also you have to show that, like, you can't just say, you know, that guy raped me because he wouldn't do something arbitrary and end up giving evidence against him, which is only your testimony. And, you know, he ends up getting 9 years in jail. There was some dude released like a couple of months ago
who
had spent 9 years in jail for a false rape claim. No documentary against that, but a gruesome, grisly murder where three young boys were hogtied, raped up the arsehole and brutally chopped up in bits. Yeah. Like, that's fucking, people are like, oh yeah, pass the popcorn. Like, it seems that the public want what the public
and they get what they want, because if you're looking as a filmmaker and a producer of shows, of course
you're gonna put the saucy stuff in, man.
But you're gonna develop more of that. And I said the West Memphis 3 was probably a more shocking case than Avery.
Absolutely.
And probably one of the most shocking ones, because there is now, if you do watch the confession tapes, which is ridiculous.
For the evidence, it is more shocking. When you see, I've actually seen the pictures of the, we'll talk about it now, I don't want to ruin the suspense, but I've actually seen the pictures of the wounds that the young boys have on their bodies.
Have you?
Yeah, like, they're online. It's fucking grim. But also, you can see how people are like, yeah, they chopped them up like a satanic ritual or what have you, right? So they have Stephen Avery's kind of testimony and all that stuff that says, like, no, I didn't do it, yeah. No, I didn't do it, no.
Mm.
But the way they framed that documentary was that the Avery family wanted to sue the police in order to stop that court case coming through. They had to pin him to the wall, and he had to use all of the money. He had to settle with the police for enough money that would just pay for his case, so when he came out the other side, he would have zero.
Yeah.
Whether he won or lost the case. But the overwhelming wall of evidence from Ken Kratz and from all of the police and all the stuff, as well as then the ulterior evidence, which is the lads with the keys and they dropped it here and it wasn't there and the fingerprints and no blood and the bed wasn't like how could he stab him real wildly like that
and no blood or
all of that stuff that's totally like obviously bullshit in court, right? And then you're one who's like, yeah, I did the blood test, but like the sample absolutely got tampered with, all of that stuff. Like, all of those things pointed towards like justice porn to make sure that we thought that Stephen Avery was being put down innocently again as part of the narrative. But like you said, what they don't show you about the West Memphis 3, like, melt your face. Okay. Some of the stuff that those young lads were at. And seriously, like, the stuff that they were doing, and then when they got put into jail, you're like, yeah, okay. It's probably, like, they wouldn't stay there that long if people didn't believe that it actually could have been done. But because they sold it like a satanic ritual, and Damien Eccles is like basically a satanic guy, and Miss Kelly, who's one of the other boys, we go through the characters of it now, like, he said, yeah, we did it. And we did it exactly the way you said we did it. And it was an identical story to how Brendan Dassey was cajoled duress because he is mentally deficient.
And fed information and promised he'd be able to go home. And then all of a sudden he's going, yeah, I just want to get the shit out of here.
Exactly.
But it's mad because I think during the 90s there was, not only just in this case, but I think there was that fear of satanic crime.
Yeah,
in
satanic
America.
Panic was going on
satanic
at the time.
Satanic panic, yeah, and it wasn't just isolated there.
We talked about it before now on the Charlie Manson episode. We've talked about it on the Aleister Crowley episode.
What a weird, weird man.
Oh, stop. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Class, like. We talked about how basically, like, the 80s, just Americans were just afraid. And coming into the 90s, they weren't any less afraid because there were a war in Iraq and it was all this kind of stuff. But, like, there always has to be an enemy.
Yeah,
and because communism was gone,
yeah,
satanic panic took over, decided, like, Judas Priest, those two young lads killed themselves.
Yep.
You know, 1993, it's only a few years before the likes of Columbine. People are afraid of teenagers.
And funny as well, because I know things like the Anarchist Cookbook was featured a lot in this kind of... nearly tied in with this occult anarchism and satanic stuff, because the Columbine guys were big proponents. Absolutely. Or used a lot of the information to do that. So there was a backdrop of satanic fear, but and someone who fits the bill is going to be absolutely shuttled in a little
like,
bit.
As far as teenagers at the time, you're talking about like in the 60s you had flower power, and mm-hmm. there was like a kind of a peaceful revolution as much as you could be. And then in the 70s it was punk, and they totally like retreated and they were disparate from mainstream media. Nothing was mainstream in the 70s. And then the 80s were like, well, we're fed up with that, and everything was mainstream. And pop music and all that stuff, and MTV generation, and all these things started to be created for the first time. And then as a kind of an ebb and flow, like the tide of culture going in and out, the 90s then became another type of retraction from mainstream, where people started to get almost dissident. Grunge was out, like anti-pop, anti-music.
Nirvana was around 90s, early 90s.
Oh yeah, but as well as that, like the whole Seattle scene, like all Pearl Jam and all these guys, was all about like unemployment was rife. Like people were, like America was struggling at that point. You were coming out of like a really bad recession. Reaganomics was fucked up. And people were looking, like teenagers were rebellious, rebelling, and older people were afraid of them.
And
they were afraid of teenagers, and the culture that they brought was something that was completely alien and completely brand new. And I think, to be honest, I think it was the last brand new revolution. Since then, there's been a lot of like homogeny and
just evolving of the same thing.
It's just a repeat. There's nothing completely new, and there hasn't been since the early 90s. But this stuff, like coming in like heavy metal music and all of this stuff,
I love it, because a lot of them, they characterized the West Memphis 3 as, you know, that was one of their defining characteristics of, oh, they liked heavy metal music, so clearly this is the work satanic of the devil. This is the devil. And it's like, okay.
So yeah, with all that kind of out of the way, like you have to get yourself into the mentality of what's happening at this time, because like when this happened, it was so shocking. Like Cormac, Luke, I don't know if you've seen, I'll show you some of the stuff afterwards. Like you might not sleep, like it's fucking rough. And there are certain things, like Johnny Gosch had happened like only a couple of years before. Oh,
the guy on the milk carton.
Yeah, man.
First guy in the milk. And that's funny you mention that as well, because the... was it the late 80s or the 70s and 80s had that massive spate of small town Americans were having a massive problem with child kidnappings. Ridiculously high. And again, a lot of that was...
all the pedos, man.
Pedophile rings, and again, satanic cult sex rings as well.
And they got better at not getting caught. Like, there's still as many kids going missing in America today as there was in the 70s. But it's just not being put out there, you know?
Yeah, so
like,
I mean,
you want to watch that shit, man. It's Pizzagate. I'll shout it. Shout the fucking thing.
It's been a bit of a messed up time in America, and this case is a bit crazy, but we'll go through, maybe we'll set the scene about what happened right back
so
in there.
We're talking about like 1993.
Yep.
In the middle of like grunge America. You're talking about Arkansas, which is, I mean, apologies to anybody from Arkansas, but it would be slightly more removed than somewhere that would be closer to the northwest or to the southeast.
It definitely wouldn't be San Francisco. Traditional and Christian evangelical, and straight away, obviously, that their
country.
It wasn't some sort of Buddhist enemy that formed in the minds. It's nearly, you know, you're projecting your fears on these young boys. But May 19,
y'all don't want to be coming around here with your heavy metal music.
You take your heavy metal music and your devil music and you get on out of here, you know. And there's a very good clip from one of those documentaries where it's literally
a
hillbilly in denims going, I think this is hell on earth right here, there, now. And for many ways, you know, again, not being disrespectful, but sometimes you're not going to argue with those people. They've made their mind up straight away that this is the devil, these boys are the devil. Happy days. But what happened, basically the rundown of it, in May 1993, West Memphis is the town in Arkansas, Tennessee, that this happened. Three young lads, Stephen Branch, Chris Byers, and Michael Moore, not the film director. Okay, definitely not the film director.
No.
Rode their bikes into the woods, were out playing or whatever, did not return home. Alarm is raised. Everyone goes and searches the next day. Local police can't be found.
They're like swiping through like brush and all this kind of stuff. Like the the bikes are found.
Yeah.
And then they're like, fuck.
Because the bikes, yeah, you know what it's going to be bad news there. Yeah, and then the continued search goes down to a nearby Robin Hood Hills. There's a creek down there, and they find the bodies mutilated, tied up, and in a pretty disgusting state of affairs. And
they'd been gone for a day or a little bit over a day or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bodies had started to take on water because they'd been dead and lying in the swamp for a while. Yeah. There's a thing, what happens when you leave a body in water after it's dead, there's a thing called slippage, where basically the meat separates from the bones.
Oh, okay.
And starts coming off, right? If anyone's ever seen, you know, that picture of the dude that falls off the roof and he has the wedding finger, and the ring catches the meat of the wedding ring finger and pulls it off. So, it's just so that was kind of happening a little bit to their extremities. And what had happened, their bodies had been mutilated. Their little dicks had been like chopped off. There was like chunks taken out of them and stab wounds and different like bits and chunks. It didn't, like, I mean, we'll explain what that is later on. But when you see that first, three little lads hogtied.
Yeah.
And fucked into a creek face first.
Yeah, yeah.
With their nose, their eyelids, their ears and lips, and their little dicks and balls, as well as big chunks taken out of their torso and all. That's pretty fucking rough, boy.
And again, when you're coming from the background of,
like, West Memphis in Arkansas, like, that shit doesn't happen.
And I mean, how do you, like,
and there's three of them, not one, but all three of these kids.
And so, I mean, like, that obviously shows some sort of intention. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not a random...
Absolutely.
And it's not a random accident that you covered up. It's not as if you banged one of them with a pole and you had to try and fake it because you're shitting it. It's the fact,
like,
that
oh, shit.
One, two, three
happened.
And how it happened, or what the motive... Like, we're still unclear as to why this happened in the first place, or the motive behind some of the killers were. So that happened.
They were bound with their own shoelaces, and they had got smacked in the skull. So there was like evidence of smashed skull from some type of weapon that was not identified.
Yeah, and then what proceeds from there is, as we talked about a little bit already, can you imagine, one, the fear, if you stumble across those street bodies and realize that there's a person or persons out there capable of this in your town, holy shit, there's going to be a pressure on you, strangers, pressure from the village.
Must be an outsider.
Go get the shotguns, boys, this ain't from under here. And then... but then obviously they turned to three guys to arrest them. Damien Eccles, who would be kind of the face of the West Memphis Three, who would be known.
Now
Jason Baldwin and Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., who we talked about a little bit, was
light of IQ points.
But yeah, he would have been suffering from, but would have had noted a lower IQ and learning disabilities and challenges with regard to that. But back in 1993 Arkansas, you're not going to get help with that, and you're not going to have a special needs assistant there with you in interrogation or whatever. You know
back
what I mean?
Back in 1993, you were just called dumb.
Yeah, you're pretty much like insulted and called dumb, and working on the farm, living in a trailer park. But so. Again, the reason the spotlight is shone on him, or shone on these three, is because they had been involved with the police before. Yeah. They had been some vandalism and shoplifting.
Teenage ne'er-do-wellingness.
But I suppose
like bouncing around, lighting fires. Like Damien Eccles had been known to be into, like, as it was fashionable at the time, bit of eyeliner, black hair, few old heavy metal jumpers.
But do you think, right?
Setting fires, like, you know, he wasn't out killing small animals and shit.
But if you know, if you're looking at this through the lens of an evangelical Christian,
of course,
you're going to, because you know, their explanation of it would be not that there is behavioral issues or the social issues, or that there is mental health issues, or there's just, you know, you're just a teenager going through shit. Do you know what I mean?
It would be hormones running up and down the legs of my trousers.
I sure wouldn't know what's going on, but you can, not that you understand, but the perspective I'd imagine is there's something up with these boys.
There's something weird. And it's not from what I know. It's not inside my sphere of understanding. So
well, you're labeling it as a darkness over these boys. They're darkening themselves. They're playing with fire, which is going to be associated with hell and the devil who breathes fire out his eyes.
And heavy metal music,
eyes.
And they wear black, and they look satanic. And you're going to be looking at what the fucking TV was showing at the time, which was people like stabbing babies and stuff like that. So, of course, when you hear three little kids are dead, you're thinking,
and you know what,
the Satanists did it.
There's a whole other series of episodes you could do on how the media fucks up trials and sentences people before it ever gets to York. But if you're presented with that, media framing, as we said, you know, everything else is left out. The dark hair, the past record, all this shit is thrown in your face. And you come from a very religious background where you're like, there is evil in the world. And sometimes these evil people are possessed by the devil or are influenced by the devil or are controlled by darkly world forces. You're going to be like, well, I'm trying to think, if that was me, I would find it very difficult to convince myself it wasn't them.
As well, though, like mental health issues, schizophrenia, like these kind of things were often seen as they were possessed by the devil, or it was a, you know, by way of it, by plea of insanity or whatever. But it's not. It's like these guys were just odd dudes.
Yeah,
and the police wanted a quick public, and you know,
the police wanted to be, they want to be human and do their job. They want to be successful,
and they wanted to be able to quieten a maddening crowd who was like, "We want to fucking." You know, they needed someone quick,
and I imagine I often think as well, the police,
same with Stephen Avery,
are always painted in the villain's role in these documentaries. Yeah. You know, it's just like, you didn't do this, and you're arresting, you're doing justice wrong. But I imagine there's part of them that also believe. Well, maybe they make themselves believe it or just convince themselves. But, like, I imagine there's some part of their human psyche that actually wants to find the killer.
Of course. It's a vocational job. Yeah. But at the same time, when you look at police corruption now, when they're talking about, like, planting evidence or doing any of that stuff. And at the same time, we were watching TV shows like CSI and NCIS and all of these things going, like, fuck. Like, there seems to be jizz everywhere. Like, jizz is everywhere.
Oh yeah.
So whenever there's a crime scene, look for the jizz and you'll find your killer.
Yeah.
Right. And the way they're able to just find, like, you know, what was it, in the Making a Murderer case, like the contact DNA. So it's like skin left sweat on a fucking thing, and you're able to pick sweat particles and DNA, like fucking crazy shit.
Man, you've never left your sweat particles anywhere,
I leave them almost everywhere. In 1993, were they able to do that shit? Like,
what was the problem with the first case?
This was a trial by emotion. This was a trial through shock tactics and through bias.
Yeah.
Right? And they were up showing the gruesome pictures to the jury. They were laying out a narrative, as the prosecution is wont to do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the same with OJ and the same with all these cases where they're putting out, they have to set up a narrative to make you believe that they'll do it. And literally, it's one less set of lads who are arguing against another set of lads, and whoever wins, you know, gets to go home.
What I don't get now, is that when they have, you know, their eye on the target and their suspects, that they never even consider to follow up on or chase other leads. If this was, you know, a good investigative cop, he might have followed up somewhere else. You know, they seem to lock in and lock down and make it fit the three people that they have, as opposed to kind of maybe going, this motivation doesn't make sense for these three lads, as bad and dangerous as they look, as they could be perceived. What's their motive? We don't really know. But is there anyone else? And they always seem to kind of dismiss everyone else, which is a weird one for me, because I would think personally that the fear of having the wrong person means that there's a killer. The actual killer could be out there, and that's more dangerous.
More dangerous.
But then again, we're not ever been in that pressurized position where there's a crowd of people outside the studio going, find the killer. Do you know what I mean?
I understand what you mean, but at the same time, I play both sides of the fence for that particular point, because I have to go, yeah, you want a killer. Like, most of those guys are found within the first 48 hours. If not, it takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
Or, on the other side, the cops are fallible and they can be wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
And if they are biased and they go, somebody robbed the store, did you see who he was? No, he's wearing a mask. Did you see, like, anything about him? No, it was probably a black guy. You're like, well, you're a racist cop then.
Mm.
Do you know, if they have a pre-existing prejudice? These people had a pre-existing prejudice towards Damien Eccles and the other two lads, right? But why did they take all three of them? They weren't the best of mates. They weren't hanging out all the time.
Yeah.
But they took in Jesse Miskelly.
Yeah.
And the only reason that this whole thing stuck was because when they said it to him, they went, if you don't fucking say this, you're going to get fucked in the bum in jail, boss.
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah, okay, come here. Show me the pictures. Yeah, we did that and we did this. And he's showing the pictures and goes, and maybe you chopped off their dicks in a satanic sex ritual. And he's like, yeah, we done chopped off their dicks in a satanic sex ritual.
Yeah,
and
you're like, you
can't even say it, man.
But again, I can't remember. You're going to have to refresh my memory on this. Because a lot of these forced confessions happen without
without consent, without anybody supervising, without any adults. He was just
now,
in...
Now, maybe I've been indoctrinated from watching too much American
Is it admissible
shows.
In court?
But just was kind of going, you know, I want a lawyer. You know, you would presume if you're in that situation, you'll ask for a solicitor or a lawyer.
Yeah, but not if you're, you know, mentally deficient.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? And there's a whole thing, there's a video online that says, do not ever... Ever talk to the cops. Have you seen that video? So there's a guy and he's given like a seminar on, and I'm a lawyer and this is, and I was a prosecution lawyer, and this is what happens whenever you talk to the cops. If they ask you a thing and you say no, and later on they ask you and you even vary the slightest amount, that means anything you say from then on is totally inadmissible as truth, you've totally undermined your own legitimacy.
Yeah.
Like, never say anything to the cops ever. So when they're pulling this lad in, he's like, what did I do? You know what you did. Oh yeah, I do know what I did. It's the fucking the My Cousin Vinny situation.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I shot the clerk. Say that again, boy. I shot the clerk. Like, is he going like, are you saying that I shot the clerk? But he's just saying it in a New York way.
Yeah.
And they just fucking jumped on him and went, he's confessed to shooting the clerk twice. That's it. He said it twice. You know, that's what's happening here. Jesse Miskelly was basically, like, nobody knows, like, was he bullied into it? Was he totally coerced? I said they were pushing the thing across the table going, listen, you're going to go to jail and get fucked up the bum unless you say that you did this thing. Like,
and apparently,
he is the key to why they were first put in court and first went on trial. And that was the crux of the case. They had no, like, it was all circumstantial evidence. There was no way to be able to push
Damien. No physical evidence linking them to three of those, to that area, to that
time. There was no
way
to be able to put Damien Eccles on the crime scene. In fact, it was more probable that Stevie Branch's stepdad was on the scene, and another man was on the scene who came out as a witness later on. We'll talk about that in a minute. But like, there was other people who were at the scene who were near Robin Hood Hills who much more could have been a possible culprit.
And it's
and
weird.
There were questioned, and there's fucking the confession tape and the videos of that dude.
Yeah.
And he basically ties himself up in knots with lies and then just goes, yeah, he's absolutely guilty. But he'll never ever go to jail for it. Like,
yeah.
Because
of what happened.
Because of the Alford plea.
Yep.
The boys had to, what the Alford plea that we found out. We have a Stephen Avery episode from, I think, 2015 on our vid.me channel. So vid.me/thoseconspiracyguys. It's a live video show from ages and ages ago where we had guests on and we were talking about this case after we'd just watched it on Netflix. So it's a bit fresher. And the Alford plea was what Stephen Avery was made to take when he was being released the first time.
Did he take that as well?
Yeah.
Such a weird law. How that ever came into
it means that you can't.
It means you can't sue the state.
You can't sue the state,
and they'd never
because
have to
you're
admit.
Already guilty. You said, "Yeah, I am guilty," but your sentence is zero. Okay, you can go free.
But it's so weird because that whole Alford plea. Yeah, you are allowed admit that you're guilty, but still be presumed innocent.
Yes,
it's like a. Orwell's double think. Do you know what I mean? It's a social double think where
to get the court out of trouble,
to make sure the court out of trouble,
to make sure the court is not it stays infallible.
But
or
what's
whatever.
Really weird about the whole thing is, one, you admit to being guilty.
Yeah.
You are still presumed to be innocent, though.
But
that
means they
that.
Don't have to go and reopen the case and that, find somebody who did commit it.
But that's
so
what
they
I mean.
Can close the case because you're the guilty party.
So you can't sue the state. You can't get any compensation, and you're still letting the real killer away, if that makes sense.
I wonder if you wouldn't take the Alford plea and still got released, would that mean that because you've done 18 years for a rape that you could just go out and do a rape then and not have to go to jail for it?
Hang on, say that again.
If you had got out
like
of...
Like the double jeopardy kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can only be convicted of murdering someone once. So. Yeah.
So if you went out and you were like, oh, I have a free rape in my back pocket.
Stephen
Avery,
I know what you mean.
You'd be like...
If you were...
I've done 18 years for fuck all.
If you're convicting and killing someone who faked their own death, right? And then that person comes back, I think you can kill them scot-free. If you've been convicted of murder, but... Well,
and,
those circumstances
and done your time, and done your time and all that
you
stuff.
You can play your murder card.
I think that's maybe why the Alford plea is put into effect, because you're not then owed anything because you are actually guilty on paper of that crime and you've paid your full debt to society or whatever.
It's such a messed up
it's
thing.
It's fucked, man. Alford plea, we're going to go through, I'm going to make a video and describe exactly
how
that thing works. It is confusing,
see,
but...
Where that came from the first time it was used would be an interesting one to see that, but they used that in the end to get out without jumping ahead too far. And I know.
But that's it though. Now they're out. So they never have to go back and look for Stevie Branch's stepdad or the evidence or any of that stuff. And he'll never be convicted because they already have the guilty parties.
You are tweaking something from my memory talking to me, because I watched a couple of these documentaries and I remember watching... somebody came out to one of these documentary filmmakers who was a friend of the family and said, I was over at my friend's house who was, in the company of the stepdad, and said, there's the family secret. And, the son or the cousin or someone knew that their uncle had killed these kids, and that's the family secret. And they were like, what? So what do you mean the family secret? It's like, oh yeah, well, my dad or my uncle killed did the deed, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, I know that's speculation, and I know that's kind of...
Well, there's witness reports, and that guy you're talking about is Curtis Gott.
Right, yeah.
And then Christian Sisk claimed that Hobbs, who was Stevie Branch's stepdad, he was the one who actually did it. This guy shows up when they're making, I think, West of Memphis, and he's nearly crying, telling it the whole time. And he's like, he rang me and asked me to go to the forest. And then I was like, I can't go. And he's like, you got to come. And then I got in the car, and he just tells the whole story of how he went out to the and he doesn't actually say what happened when they went out there, but he looks like he really wants to tell something to somebody, you know. And then you look at Hobbs's testimony on camera, and he's just smoking fags going, I didn't do nothing, can't prove nothing, I didn't do nothing, wasn't there, never seen it, never seen nobody. no, like, that's it, you know. Very fucking creepy dude. So another witness, David Jacoby, who worked in the Memphis Ice Cream Company with Hobbs.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the alibi.
Okay.
For Terry Hobbs that night.
Yeah, yeah.
And but the morning of the murders. So what were they doing?
Mm.
What were they doing? These two lads were supposed to be just hanging out in the forest.
As
they were just
do?
Like going for a walk. He said, what do you want to do? I'll just go for a walk at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're like,
down the old river bed and into
the
creek.
What the fuck are you doing? Like, what are you doing there? Do you know? Like, a lot of extra accusations came out when these lads came out of jail. Because like you said, man, there is a real murderer out there.
And the thing about it is it usually not the case when people are murdered. And so, no, I don't want to say murdered in a gruesome fashion. Are murdered that... You know, family and friends. You know the way they would usually, a wife is murdered, it's usually the husband.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It's always, or, like, say 80% of rapes are done by people that you already know.
And then the whole case of let's say if there's a childhood death, it's probably the parents, you know, because it's a close, it's a proximity thing. Do you know what I mean? It's who's ever closest to them would do it. And why they wouldn't follow it up and then realize, why they wouldn't, not admit to being wrong, but like why they wouldn't discard the lads if it seems stronger. Do you know what I mean? And it always blows my mind where they don't give a shit, where they're like, well, we got our confession now, so thanks very much, I'm taking lunch, and they did it too.
It wouldn't usually be a random teenager who wants to get his rocks off that would then get his three mates to kidnap three little boys, fuck them all up the bum, tie them up, strip them off, and then fire them into a creek. That's usually not the way those things happen. Usually it's done on like a cousin or somebody that they know that's in a controlled environment that they're able to manipulate. Usually like a habitual like pedophilic rape like that doesn't happen, that ends in like a gruesome three-body murder or anything. Like, this is...
And you know, because...
It's very unusual. And that's why it's such a fucking massive case, because it's so unusual and so over the top and gruesome.
And do you know why it would be a little bit more confusing as well? That three people aren't going to have the same desire and urge to carry out that murder in the exact same fashion. So,
but they played Damien Eccles as like the ringleader, as the controller of the other two, because they were weaker of mind.
But that's what I mean. As like, so there'll be one ringleader.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if you wind up, and if you're not 100%, if you are only 99% behind doing what you did to those three boys, right? If you're only not, and there's 1% of doubt, after that comes out, you're going to have a mental breakdown, and you would be like, what the fuck did I just do?
Of course.
And you're going to be like, he did it. I was a part of it. I shouldn't have been. I can't deal with this. I'll go to prison.
And that's what happened to Jesse Miskelly. He broke down, and it fits the narrative of what you would presume somebody to act like after they've done something like that.
Yeah, I suppose.
And he came out and confessed and went, oh, I'm so sorry, and all that stuff. And everyone bought it because that seems to be the natural reaction.
When you look at that, that's why you can't buy it. And I suppose if you're going to get some comfort for that being in that town. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because now we have the dudes.
We have them. We can reinforce that.
Also, there's the whole shadow of Manson. Like, like what Charlie Manson convinced those people to do.
That's actually very true.
It's unspeakable. Yeah. Like cut a baby out of a woman's belly and paint fucking Helter Skelter and blood on the wall with the child's guts. Like
fucked up.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
For Damien Eccles to convince two fucking half-wits
suppose
to pull three kids off their bikes, fuck them up the bum and then tie them up and throw them in the river.
The only thing is about the, there was for the Manson stuff, he had greater control over the daily lives of those people that he was indoctrinating and brainwashing.
Yeah, he was using brainwashing techniques that he probably learned from the military. If you check out our Charlie Manson episode, and he was definitely using LSD.
Yeah. So that makes your
MK Ultra mind control techniques.
So there you go. So, but that would make your mind more malleable and impressionable. And it was in that.
But these young lads were all mad taking drugs, like.
Were they?
Well, they were taking hallucinogenics. They were drinking a lot. They weren't under like mind control amounts of drugs, but like a teenager in Arkansas amount of drugs. It's not unheard of for them to be taking narcotics. But at the same time, it's not Manson levels. But that's enough for a white Christian neighborhood to go, it was the drugs! Like,
no damn drugs taken in your brain and make it to the devil. No, but I just, for me, I find it hard to believe that Damien Eccles could
control those other two lads.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe too. This is it, like. But you have to look at the stepfathers. If you're going to be looking for somebody that does a crime like this, you're looking more close to home.
Yeah, yeah.
Terry Hobbs, right, who was Stevie Branch's stepdad, and John Mark Byers, who was Chris Byers' stepdad.
Yeah.
Like, the two of them started speaking out to the press a lot. And especially John Mark Byers, who was that big, tall guy with the, like, really overgrown ginger mustache and the balding head, who had the little wife who was all like, he was like, you don't tell me that them little motherfuckers came and they took my boy, yeah. And he took my boy and brought him out to Forest Hill, yeah. And there's loads of fucking news footage of him standing in front of courtrooms, standing in front of police or news cameras, like, any chance to get a bit of camera on him. And I'm watching that going, I think he doth protest too much. as well. And it could be that Terry Hobbs and John Byers came together and did that.
And
kept it on the down low.
Now, can you remind me again? Because I have seen so many of these different documentaries so recently. But yeah. You know, the mother of one of the boys that was killed.
Stevie Branch's mother.
Did she leave her husband in the end? And did she wind up defending the West Memphis Three eventually and believing that they didn't do it?
Yes.
Which to me is another huge reason as to why.
Because Terry Hobbs is kind of a bit fucked up.
That's what I mean. And to be honest with you, to try and, for a mother to reconsider the death of her child, the evidence has to be somewhat, you know, convincing. Because you can't even fathom, right? If your child is gruesomely murdered and someone points
in such a way, like,
but if someone points, you know, the target on these three guys, you're gonna go there. No amount of, do you know what I mean? And when you have any sort of evidence that will reinforce that, the hatred you would have, the grief, the loss, the trauma, you need to vent it on someone. Can you see how difficult it would be for her to change her mind eventually?
Well, like, she ended up getting divorced from Terry Hobbs.
Yeah.
And then she went and sued the police for their mismanagement of the case, death, like, of her child or whatever. And Terry Hobbs, his family came forward and said, yeah, we heard him confess to these killings in private. Like, everything points to fucking Terry Hobbs, lads.
But again, as you said, because of the Alfred plea, he's fine. He's
kinda
grand.
Kinda, but they can do him for something else, maybe. Like, what's the next, like, what else has he done, you know? It's,
do you think someone like that would do more, or was this just a stupid fucking, you know, fuckhead thing?
It could be like a bunch of beers and just like, but to have the three of them, he needed some help. I think that Jacoby guy,
do you think he was just going after his stepson and the other two lads accidentally saw what he was doing?
Maybe.
And then it just escalated. Like,
I think there was talk of Terry Hobbs being overly, let's say, overly physical with Stevie Branch.
Right, okay.
In punishment and maybe in, you know, nighttime cuddle time.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's the thing with stepkids. You either don't hug them enough or you hug them too much.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the hug too much situation ended up getting out of control. Maybe Stevie told the other two lads and they were, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, only God and that fucking hole in the ground know what happened to those three young lads.
Yeah.
But to not have any of that information still
is fucked up.
That's the most criminal part of it, right? So within 2 months of those three guys, Eccles, Miss Skelly and Baldwin, they started an appeals process, so all these legal teams like had massive glaring holes in the investigations and in the evidence and the prosecution evidence at the trial, right? There's zero physical DNA linking any of the West Memphis Three with those murders, right? And the medical evidence presented was questioned at cross-examination and after the trial, because what the prosecution had purported to the jury to be sexually motivated satanic sex ritual injuries done to the bodies. Now, we're getting graphic now, so if you're in work or eating your lunch
or playing this to your children before they go to bed, turn it off.
Take a pause button, right? Basically, right, the kids had been chomped on and thought to be stabbed.
Yeah.
Right? They were sexually assaulted and their little dicks and balls were ripped. Not cut, but ripped.
Oh, wasn't cut.
Ripped out of their bodies.
Right.
Right? Their nose, lips, eyes, ears, all ripped. Nipples, loads of big stab and like gouge wounds all around their whole body, right? And in the 2007 kind of re-examination of DNA evidence, and then as West of Memphis was being made, they found that in that creek where the three boys' bodies were, lived snapping turtles.
Yeah.
And the snapping turtles will feed on loose meat or low-hanging meat. So we're talking about lips, nose, eyelids, ears, and little boys' dicks and balls.
Wow.
They would also chomp on the bigger parts of the meat, like the arms and like the legs, leaving bruises, and then bite into the main torso with their very sharp razor beaks, right? And it would make these incisions that look like stab wounds, but that absolutely match. And if you watch West of Memphis, there's a dude who keeps these snapping turtles, and they're big fuckers. They're like the size of dogs.
Are they big?
The size of dogs. Like it looks like a fucking carving knife had gone in and out of you, right? So what the guy in the documentary does, he gets a side of bacon and he lashes it down in front of this, because, I mean, who doesn't like bacon? Gets the side of bacon down in front of the snapping turtle. The cunt takes a bite of it. He pulls it out. And then they have the fucking picture of what the wound looks like
on
the bodies of the kids. Oh, and they hold it one up against the other and it's absolutely a match. So what the prosecution looked at and saw was a horse. They said it was a zebra.
Yeah.
To make it more complicated, to fit their narrative that this lad was a satanic, you know, a sex criminal, and like painted those lads suggested that to Jesse Miskelly, and he agreed with it because he's too fucking stupid to say no.
Do you know the okay, so that explains away the disfigurements on the body.
Yeah.
But what about, you said that they were raped. Were they raped?
They were raped. Apparently so. But who raped them? Who tied them up? Who took off their clothes? Their clothes were just discarded.
The turtles didn't do that.
Exactly. But it wasn't a satanic thing. It wasn't like a ritualistic thing. It was just like a regular vanilla child rape.
Because you're wondering then a ton of shit. Like, you'd have to then separate out the body mutilations that are missing from
the sexual assault. Yeah.
And then you have two different situations. And what I would do in that situation is get it. Well, I know you couldn't do this, but if someone would like to donate a dead corpse and throw it into river, and because you'd have to test it, the only way you could test it is would that happen?
But from these experts who handle the snapping turtles, they say absolutely that would happen. Any kind of little hanging meat that would get pulled out, that is exactly the guy who's a snapping turtle expert said. That's definitely. I looked at those wounds. That's definitely snapping turtles.
So we can write that off as snapping turtles for the body disfigurements.
So it says in the documentary, and so the expert says, and I've read online.
So now we're left with who murdered them and sexually assaulted them.
Well, this is the thing: who has a history of rape, who has a history of sexual assault, who would have the means, mode of an opportunity to do that, and then be able to get rid of the bodies without anybody...
Without
the kids struggling. It was obviously someone he knew to lead them all the way down that far.
That's what I mean.
But there's no way to grab them up and bring them all the way down to the fucking...
So where were their bikes found?
So this is the thing. There is some consternation around the actual raping of the children. Was there an examination done on their buttholes to find out if it actually happened? I can't find any evidence, and a lot of people speculate online that there may not have been anything, but this is the story that we're given from the testimony of Jesse Miskelly that was kind of coerced out of him as part of the satanic narrative the satanic sex ritual narrative, which on one part has already been false with the snapping turtles like biting off extremities, and then on the other side, did anyone actually examine, you know, but, the boys' bums?
Because like what I would, the question comes to my head is the timing. Like, if there was sexual assault happened, are they able to tell how recent it was in relation to the death, or was that something from an ongoing child abuse, if that makes sense? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because what would be the motivation behind pulling the kids? Like, the bikes are found in the river, their bodies are there, the clothes are discarded, thrown on the hill close to where they are.
Is that for,
like, it looks like they were stripped off, raped, killed, like bashed in the head, tied up and thrown in the river. Could it be that, or could it be that somebody wanted a childless woman to be married to because the child was causing too much trouble, and instead of rape being the
but when you look
motivation, that it was just like, I don't want a kid in my life, I want Pam all to myself. So,
and I just you know, the satanic cult message, cult killing and sexual assault messages is thrown down,
all that came
but did anyone look into
a presumption?
But if you look into the actual satanic killing rituals,
is it not
does it even line up with a satanic killing? Because is it not a newborn child that has to be sacrificed? Are those kids not too old?
I don't think it's just someone pure, like somebody young and pure. It doesn't have to be particularly a baby or whatever.
Like, there's no age limit on the sacrificing child.
If there's any Satanists out there who do you know what I mean? I don't think Satanists actually, like, people who actually worship Satan, the light bringer, the morning star of the morning. I don't think there's any kind of baby sacrificing ritual actually going on in Satanism. I could be wrong. If anyone out there is a Satanist, hit a brother up with some info.
Like, I
would say that it's not that, and I'd say Satanism is not.
It's more of a pagan ritual. Yes,
you'd sacrifice a goat for you know, a good herd or whatever. Like, it's not, blood sacrifice is not a mainstay, I think, of Satanism, and I think it's just that satanic panic, that public perception of how they are, of how they're perceived in movies and stuff like that.
And that's, you know, like,
it's powerful. It's a powerful thing,
and,
man.
And from a media,
Cormac, all you got to do is convince 12 people, and if they all went, yeah, fuck them, that's it. All you have to do is convince 12 people. Like,
no, yeah.
Same with Stephen Avery. 12 motherfuckers. If they all say yes, you're done.
Well, I think we need robot judges.
Automated robot judges.
I guarantee you could develop that.
I am the law.
Your argument does not compute. Guilty. And now you're dead. No, because it's just trying to find, like, you're teasing through. And again, we have the beauty of having hindsight and being detached from that environment. It's obviously different if you're in the middle of West Memphis when this panic is happening. No one's going to be thinking clearly or logically. As you said, completely emotional. And I think the media, satanic panic, that was the old school form of clickbait. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. They knew the shit would go down. Like,
you would get viewers. You would get newspaper purchases.
It'd be in the 24-hour news cycle before the 24-hour news cycle was
That's
invented.
What I mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's that shock and panic that headline writers have always known about. That if you were faced, as an editorial decision, if you were faced
Fuckers
with...
Fuckers write books about it now.
But if you were faced with an editorial decision of what will we lead with?
If it bleeds, it leads, yeah.
Well, there you go. And the whole thing of which is... And as you said, our brains love stories.
Of course.
And they love enemies. And we love that narrative. And we can be united over our shared fear of a danger. You know what I mean? It's nearly evolutionary. Someone that we can put outside our tribe and kind of go, they're a threat to us.
Exactly. We unify in
terror.
In terror, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you're looking at that kind of going, whatever. And if you're an editor...
I do think, though, that those type of stories are unraveling themselves in this day and age. Because we are now fighting against that psychologically. We're fighting against that phenomenon of unite ourselves in terror. Now we're like...
We're dividing each other on ideals.
That, but also, like, skepticism is healthy, that there's not as many... Like, in 1983, anything that was on TV, majority of people were going, yeah, it's on TV.
And that
if
was
it's
your
on
own,
TV, it's real.
No, but that was your only information source. There was no this. There was no internet. There was no podcast. There was no alternative sources. There was no files you could get.
Like, you could read books and think for yourself, but there's no books on that. Dissemination of that information worldwide. You couldn't just talk into a microphone and have that be worldwide information from then on. But there was a skeptic community back then, of course, absolutely there were, but they're going to, like, conventions and writing each other letters and having phone calls. Yeah. It's not like a forum that you could
go on.
And
I don't even think we can appreciate how insular and contained West Memphis would have been, because we can get a completely different view on all parts of the world now that we never got before. Do you know what I mean? But now, back but then TV was the authority on information.
If the news said something then, people would believe it. If the news says something, we're actually kind of tend to lean towards not believing it first until it's true. Like every bad thing that happens, everyone's like, false flag. And a lot of times it does have the characteristics of a false flag.
And but to be honest with you, a lot of times you can see it and a confirmation bias, and you move it into fitting your narrative, as the police did with these kids kind of thing. But now it happens on a massively bigger scale.
Because you want to believe that the people who are in charge are actually powerless and not in charge, and we can take over at any time. We just have to unite as people together as one towards the singular enemy. So maybe we haven't changed that much at all.
We're just doing it in different ways and different yokes. But I think that the media in this regard to the case, because it was such an authority, that we forget that TV, print and radio was the only way you heard about this.
Well,
there was no conflicting opinion you could get if the news was only giving you one side.
Look what happened in this case, right? You had a bunch of the most famous celebrities that heard this story, saw it on the news because it was on like a weekly update. Like, this week, these lads are going to, you know, this lad's sentenced to death. Like, Jamie Nichols is sentenced to death, you know.
Yeah.
So the likes of Johnny Depp, Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings fame, Eddie Vedder, Henry Rollins, Marilyn Manson, all of these guys came together and started protesting against these guys being in jail.
Yeah.
And this is after one of the documentaries that was released, and
it was probably the original one, wasn't it? The West Memphis one or the Paradise Lost?
The Paradise Lost that was put out. These guys went, "What the fuck?" and came together in a groundswell of support for the West Memphis Three, and then they made Peter Jackson actually produced and helped to make these documentaries by HBO, and within 17 years, these guys were out, but it took 17 years.
70 fucking years.
Peter Jackson was like a massive proponent of their innocence, right? He was really hammering hard for these lads to get out of jail. And once they finally did, he was like, high fives. What? You're not going to catch the relay? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed that only 40s famous people, those lads still be in jail, boy.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, isn't it?
That's crazy, man.
And
it wouldn't be as famous as it is now to us. It wouldn't be as famous of a story or a case
or whatever.
Absolutely,
What I find really shocking about that thing is Eccles was sentenced to death 3 times over the course of his appeals and his yokes. And he spent 10 years in solitary confinement and nearly went blind.
Yeah.
Like, again, I don't think...
Malnourished, he nearly had... what's that thing called when you don't get enough vitamin C? Scurvy.
Scurvy,
like blindness, and mental, obviously.
Oh, you're obviously about to shut down.
But he also had a girlfriend that eventually turned into his wife.
Yeah,
they were writing letters and reading books.
Through the whole time while he was in there, came out and married her.
I think that says a lot about his character.
And can you imagine, what if they actually did it?
Imagine if they actually did it.
That's what I always say.
There's something saying about there is a small strand of blue material that's found in one of the knots that tied one of the kids up that matches a handkerchief that belonged to Damien Eccles. Now, it's unsubstantiated. There is nothing really out there. You want to talk to Paul Kelly more about it, you can tweet us about it. I'm going to find an article about that. But it is kind of one of those, like, and now, just to fuck with your head, check this. Like, it's one of those extra, like, sprinkles on the banana split of this case.
And you're kind of like, would you fuck off? Don't be throwing that in, because we've just figured out they're completely innocent. And now you're just pulling the rug out from under our feet.
But they found fibers of the boys' clothes. So the boys are wearing, like, a scout uniform. Mm. One of them was wearing, like, tennis shoes. Yeah. One of them was wearing, like, white shorts. And they found fibers of the boys' clothing in the home of Damien Eccles.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. And
it's all coming out now.
And
fuck you,
in the clothing that was found next to the Robin Hood Hills murder site, where the clothes were found in the ditch, there is blue candle wax from a candle that was in Eccles' home that was found on Stevie Branch's clothing. And this was why, later on, the narrative of a satanic ritual was perpetuated
because
it was candles and all that stuff. Now, there's also a knife, a wooden handle knife that was found in the lake behind Jason Baldwin's home. And this was the thing that was presumed to have mutilated the young boys, not the fucking snapping turtles. But you can't really, like, the blue fiber from a handkerchief that's found inside the knot, in the bodies in the lake that belonged to Damien Eccles, who had no business being near them. The blue wax and the things that were found in Damien Eccles'
house,
like, they are inexplicable.
That's weird.
They are inexplicable.
They're left out of the... a few of the documentaries that cover that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying about West of Memphis, because they're kind of painting that innocent vibe, and if you throw that kind of stuff in, it really makes it an unbiased kind of...
It fucks with your story, though.
Absolutely.
And the story wouldn't be as righteous. The story is definitely not that righteous if those are introduced. In the same way that the animal mutilations from Making a Murderer were left out, Stephen Avery mutilated animals when he was growing
up. Yeah, the cat and the fire and all that
Yeah,
stuff.
All that shit, which was conveniently left out, and a few other things that happened there.
I saw those two pictures side by side. The snapping turtle guy and the picture of the child's bite.
Mm.
And they're fucking identical, man.
Right, yeah.
Like, to me, I'm like, it was snapping turtles. But that knife at the back of Jason Baldwin's house, why did he throw that into the lake?
But does...
That was fucked right into the leg. A big wood handle carving knife.
But when was it fucked into the leg?
That's the thing, like.
How long was it there for?
Jason Baldwin failed the polygraph test, answering all the questions about that. Damien Eccles, when asked about the candle wax and all, failed all the polygraph tests. Now, they're not admissible in court, but they're admissible in the minds and hearts of the people that are on the jury, or indeed the people that are watching from home.
Yeah. And we've seen that in so many other cases.
They're told disregard that, so they're not allowed to talk about it when they go back. But when you say something like that as a prosecuting attorney in a case like that, you know that that has some kind of impact on the jury.
But it's that whole thing of...
Of course. That should be stricken from the record, but it's not really stricken from the record. It's just they're not allowed to talk about it.
They call it a negative embedded command.
Exactly.
Where it's like, don't think of a blue elephant.
Yeah.
And you have to represent that in your head to know what not
to do. Exactly.
Because the brain can't think in negative thoughts. Mm. You know, you can say, don't think of a fucking pink giraffe coming in here playing jazz music on a flute. You have to represent all of those images in your head to understand...
What you're
the
not
conversation,
exactly.
Or even just the language of it.
Yeah.
So I think they know what they're doing that as well. And obviously, as soon as you drop that seed of doubt into a juror's mind, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, that's going to grow and it's going to find legs and it's going to connect up other dots.
But also, when you're saying that thing to a jury and then you're showing them the pictures and you're showing other supporting evidence,
mm.
it's very hard to say no. Like, yeah. Everything was against them. 1983 was not a good year.
How do you think what do you think it was like to be a juror during that trial? Because
I heard a lot of them were getting sick back in the thing, because we had to look at these pictures all the time. Little kids with their fucking dicks ripped off and all. They were getting sick, like they weren't able to eat their lunches. They were fucking losing sleep.
Wouldn't you?
But imagine as well how long the case was going on, and they're all in hotel rooms, not able to talk to anybody, not able to talk only to each other, and not even about the case to each other. So you have to hold that shit in your fucking head for months.
And they obviously do. They would talk to each other. You know what I mean? Human nature,
of course,
to snap.
Yeah.
But on top of that as well, knowing that they are, I don't want to say righteous again, but they are from the area, not from the area, but obviously, you know, the jury is picked from your district or whatever it is. So
they're from your locality.
Would you be willing to go into that to under the pressure that you're in that Bible Belt state and defend Satanists? Do you know what I mean? Are you going to be biased?
I'm guessing there's social issues there as well, like cultural social issues that...
Was Miss Kelly lower income, yeah. kind of, I don't want to say trailer trash, but that kind of association class difference. So are you, as a juror back in the day, a decent human being with all of your friends and your family and society looking at you to serve justice? That's the expectation. And you don't want to serve by not doing something or not convicting. You want to serve it by being part of something that gets killers put into prison.
As well, though, there's... Like a jury selection process that goes through for trials like that,
where
they try to eliminate bias and they try to eliminate due to like socioeconomic class or race or any of that stuff, like bias towards or prejudice against sexual orientation and all that. They go through these processes of cross-examination and go, I keep number one and number five and number nine.
But I know there's only so many
you can
refusals.
Throw away, exactly. So you can only throw away so many. But in that place, how predominant would it be that you'd have the bias against these lads? So your man is like, I hate that little motherfucker. I seen him cutting up dogs in his front yard. And it's like, well, that's a lie. Number three, you're gone. And they just have like, if they've only five outs and all five of them are mad cunts and you're left with 12 other mad cunts.
Yeah. What do you do?
It seems like a predominantly... I know we keep talking about it. Maybe it's not good to talk about in another episode, but that's Stephen Avery case when they did exactly this situation.
Yeah.
They moved it to another town.
Yeah.
They had to move it to another town because if they did it in the locality, because there was a prejudice against the Avery
family
in that locality.
And you had the stupid media who were running with their narrative because it was selling papers and time slots and ad slots. People were making money off the super scary story.
Yes.
And you're going to, and again, as a business owner, if you're working for a newspaper, you're going to continue doing what works.
Well, did you ever watch the Amanda Knox documentary?
Yes.
So you've seen that guy talking about how he's like, what could I do if I didn't talk about it?
He thought that documentary was about him.
Rubbing himself, you know, how fucking cuntish he was.
Yeah, did it in the newspapers. Like, it was all over the world.
He's like, if I didn't do it, someone else would have done it. You know what I mean? I'm getting paid. I got to put it on the front page.
And you can see this.
Him and his ilk put Amanda Knox in jail for a crime she didn't commit. Or did she? But that's the thing. Did she? She got away with it twice.
Fair play to her.
I'm saying fair play if you got away with it, if you did do it. If you didn't do it, like, well done.
Well, yeah, but fair play if you did.
But fair play if you did.
Yeah.
Another weird thing. Here's the icing, right? Two men named Chris Morgan and Brian Holland, who were residents of West Memphis, and who knew the victims, mysteriously and inexplicably left town forever just days after the murder.
Shut the fuck up.
They were arrested in California on unrelated charges, and then they, too, failed the polygraph test in relation to involvement with the murders. And another, this is the weirdest one.
Right.
Another possible suspect in this crime is a mysterious man called Mr. Bojangles.
Right, okay.
And Mr. Bojangles, on the night of the murders, close by, burst into a local restaurant named Bojangles, covered head to toe in blood, and he cleaned himself in the bathroom. And as he left, he thanked the staff, and they went in and saw all the shit, cleaned it all down with bleach, bleached the whole
fucking
thing.
Fucking idiots.
Right?
And fucking idiots.
They lost all the evidence, and that man was never tracked down. There was no photographs. They couldn't give a proper description of him. But that night, that man left that. Was he the guy who did that? And did he stab them all? And is that why he was covered in blood?
Oh, because he would have need to have mutilated the bodies.
Exactly.
So
that narrative. See,
the turtles are gone.
See the way it all gets so muddled.
It's like
up,
a weird
if this then that, you know.
But like, and it's a weird, like, I don't want to say Rubik's Cube. I'm trying to figure it out. It's like you're trying to move something somewhere, but then it won't fit with everything else. So now you have to get rid of the turtles to introduce this guy.
Yes.
And you could have found out the blood straight away if that blood was the kid's blood.
Mm-hmm.
Game, set, match.
Exactly.
It's interesting about the two guys.
But the turtles thing is not 100% substantiated scientifically, obviously, because the kids were interred and their bodies weren't able to be examined.
Because what you'd need
stuff
to do is...
That was years after that this theory had come along, so the kids were already fucking dushed.
What you'd need... The two guys disappearing is interesting as
That's
well.
That's fucked up, dude.
But at the same time, did anyone else disappear that we don't know about? Do you know what I mean? Was it just a shitty town that people left? Do you know what I mean? Because have other people left that have been criminals or not criminals before? You know what I mean? That mightn't be as strong evidence of people who just left. Because you could argue as well that who'd want to live in a shitty town? You were just terrified of the big bad monster, so you're getting the fuck out of there.
Chris Morgan and Brian Holland, who are those two guys we're talking about, fucked off to California, right?
Yeah.
And when caught, put under the polygraph, 17 hours after interrogation, right? They broke it into two sessions, had them a bit of a nap in between, a sandwich, cup of tea.
Yeah.
He Christopher Morgan eventually confessed to the crime.
But that was a forced confession after 17 hours. Here we go. We're believing the police confessions after not believing them.
Christopher Morgan confessed to it after 13 hours of questioning, right? And he said, but if you ask me again, I'm going to lie. Leave me alone, right? And then he denied it that he said it, and he did the polygraph and he failed the polygraph denying it.
Right, okay.
Like, that's bananas. And then he said, I was drunk, I don't remember anything. And from then on, he said, I don't remember. And he, check it, had previously driven an ice cream truck in West Memphis.
Right.
As well as Jacoby and Hobbs, who worked in the ice cream factory in West Memphis. So these three lads
They're all linked.
They all knew each other.
And do you know what the sad thing is?
And his parents, Christopher Morgan's parents, were neighbors of the house that Stevie Branch lived in.
So there's connections there all over the place. He knew where the kids
were. He knew the dad. There was some shit going there. So maybe I throw it out there to you, the public, and you, Mr. Moore.
Okay.
Christopher Morgan killed Stevie Branch and the two kids.
Right.
And freaked out and rang Hobbs and said, come here, I'm after killing your young lad. Can you help me? And Hobbs called Jacoby, and the two of them went out to clean up all the thing, and Morgan and Holland fucked off because Christopher Morgan wanted to do some sexy stuff with them, and Hobbs made the deal because he wanted to do it too. And then these guys left for California, and Hobbs is like, plausible deniability. That's a really, like, that's a really, because both,
that's a really fucked up theory.
Well, both of those guys have admitted to doing some stuff and then recanted their admissions.
But,
it's mad, right?
It's
Morgan and Holland, I think, are very, like, much more important here than given credit, I think. And they're not mentioned in any of the documentaries, really.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Bojangles, you might, like...
Who is Mr. Bojangles? Could it be Christopher Morgan? Could it be one of those guys? Is it a completely different dude? They just know there was a guy who was covered in blood who went into the restaurant.
Why do you think the killer or killers tied the bodies up? What was the reason to tie the bodies up?
Maybe they were tied up before they were killed.
That's what I mean. Is that, do you think... Well, like,
so they couldn't run away, but...
Yeah. Heard them before. Would there be any way to suggest that, like, was there any, well, we don't know because we're not forensic scientists and we can't look at ligature marks on the legs that were caused while they were alive trying to get away.
Plus the fact there was slippage on the muscle and fat tissue, so you couldn't find any of those kind of things. Like,
I know what you mean.
If it was a bruise on the hip, it could already be a bruise, like, lower down the leg because they were in the water for as long as they were. You know? So it got a bit odd that way. Like,
so you're saying your theory?
I'm saying, you know,
I ain't saying nothing.
What are you saying, Jimmy Tightlips?
I ain't saying nothing.
Where'd he shoot you? Yeah, go suck a lemon.
Yeah. What do we tell your mother? Who said I had a mother?
isn't it crazy? Like, there's so many things coming out for that now. And yet the lads walk free. The Alfred plea is in the box. The fucking file is closed.
But if I'm living,
and there's three young lads dead. Pam has no son. Terry Hobbs is scot-free. John Mark Byers, scot-free. No kid.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, fucking game over, man.
It's a hard one to wrap your head around, but
we will be putting up the documentary West of Memphis, and we might all watch it together on rab.it or rabb.it, which is a watch along video service that we're using online now at the moment, for White Press Play, for watching movies and TV shows and stuff. But we will be watching documentaries and having a chat afterwards at some points for Patreon folk. You can join in, or we'll be streaming online. Like, it is a fucking brain melter to try and go, so while putting together the case of the innocence of Miss Kelly, Baldwin and Eccles, they also have to find somebody else to do it, to have done it. Yeah, and all the fucking signs point to Hobbs being at least involved. And if you're putting that Christopher Morgan thing, driving the ice cream truck, living next door, doing all that stuff, like, so long as you find the motivation, it makes it an awful lot easier to find the killer. So what is the motivation? Is it a sexually motivated crime? Am I hung up on that because because their little willies got bitten off by turtles?
But even if you disregard,
there's no evidence that they got fucked up the bum at all. It's just a presumption as part of the satanic narrative, right? So they didn't.
There wasn't a sexual assault assessment.
So the evidence says it was, but the evidence also said they got stabbed up when really it was turtles. So did they at all? Did they examine their buttholes? I'm not going to be typing in Stevie Branch butthole into Google. Like, I'm not doing that shit. But is it just part of the satanic sex ritual narrative that they needed to put Eccles, Baldwin and Miss Kelly in jail? Could they have not been? Maybe Hobbs is just like, I want to have my woman all to myself, and she has a little kid who's taken up all my time, and then he wanted to get rid of the kid. The two friends were there. Let's fucking do it. He got Christopher Morgan. Oh, hey, Morgan, how much money would it be if I got you to get rid of these two fucking kids? I give you a few bob and you and your mate fuck off to California. Like,
But let's add another layer to that well, right?
Because this is the cherry on the ice and on the cake.
Because let's just say the people that were involved as well, it goes up a level. So the department chiefs, government officials, politicians are involved. And to be honest with you, it's not...
Are you talking like the credit union scandal, the Franklin credit union scandal, paedophile ring type shit going on?
I'm talking paedophile ring. Because
Johnny Gosh stuff.
I'm talking Johnny Gosh because the more you read into it, the more you realise there was a disgusting sexual predatory cult happening in the 70s and 80s all across small towns.
You're painting it black now. You're getting down to it, right?
But I think...
Why are all the celebrities involved? Were they the lads who are protesting against the paedophile rings? You think Johnny Depp and Peter Jackson are all against these celebrity paedophile rings? And
maybe they know something.
This was their only way
to indirectly get at them.
Exactly.
Because they couldn't come out and say they were abused as children in Hollywood to get ahead, because we all know that story as well. Mm-hmm. And now we have the child sex pedophile rings, because we all, you know, there are so many stories of...
I don't think like Johnny Depp and Peter Jackson were abused as kids. Like Peter Jackson's in Australia or whatever, but quite possibly they had been witness to or at least heard stories of this, and they were like, I don't partake in that, and I want to stop that. And if this is a great kind of circumventive way to
get at it, expose
to draw attention to this thing happening with actual evidence, with actual dead bodies.
And here, the thing about it is, it's not, unfortunately, it's not a far-fetched to think this, because we know there was a massive amount of child sex rings going
now
on.
We know,
We know those child sex rings were used, and those young people who were abused were served up to politicians and business owners. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has come out as well. So to suggest that one of the reasons it was labeled on these was to cover up the fact that maybe something went wrong, and the lackeys were involved.
Maybe the lads that were going to California in the car were supposed to have three young lads in the boot.
Well, there you go. And this is why shit hit the fucking fan. And they're like, I have to cover it up. But the police are involved because they're protecting the politicians. And the politicians are involved because they're dirty scumbags who like engaging in this stuff. And the problem with this theory is, it's just, not that the problem is, it's just, unfortunately, it's somewhat believable because of what we know has happened in the past, like, in other cases.
That whole hypothesis is just like speculation, right?
Oh, complete.
That's like, there's no evidence to point towards that.
None at all.
But as a narrative, it is as speculative as these three lads did it with a satanic sex ritual. And why then, if you're talking about like the stuff like Pizzagate talks about, which is, you know, spirit cooking and all this kind of stuff, that kind of looks like a satanic sex ritual. So why not blame it on local kids and say that it's that, rather than what it could have been, which is a satanic sex ritual done by adults, but then pinned on children who like heavy metal music.
And an easier story to sell.
Mm.
You know, the public is going to swallow that satanic story.
It's hiding in plain sight. So whenever now there's a satanic sex ritual body turns up of some kid who has their willy chopped up.
There you go.
You can say, yeah, just pick on the local fucking heavy metal goth weirdo, and he's the lad that done it. And they'll buy that shit straight.
Because it's
man.
Easier to buy that shit than acknowledging that someone that you look up to and admire is capable. Someone normal, quote unquote normal, is capable of such disgusting, filthy.
And yet, we find these fuckers
all the time. Yeah.
And we have to wait until they die, and then all their victims come out of the closet, start pointing fingers at a load of other people that are alive.
All those other
people pay money to make them shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes away for a while until the next big kingpin dies.
I still think, though,
Jimmy Savile's 2011.
Which is...
this kind of stuff started coming out around that time.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be coming to a head that didn't really pop.
Yeah.
And we all know how uncomfortable that is.
Yeah, I think, though, like Arkansas...
It didn't fucking... It should have...
Years before.
Yeah, it should have had a lot more traction. That Jimmy Savile thing should have had a lot more traction. We talked about Johnny Gosch. We're going to do an episode on Johnny Gosch at some point.
Tragic story.
Mind face melting.
Mm-hmm.
On how detailed and how all that stuff is. Like, bananas, right?
Yeah, ridiculous.
And I can't understand how this is still unsolved. That some private investigator, somebody who has access to the stuff. So in that case, and what we have ascertained before on those conspiracy guys, if you can't find evidence that is almost obvious, and you're a pussy hair away from putting your hand on the fella who actually did it, but there's some arbitrary, like, bitty reason why it can't be done, that means that there's somebody obfuscating some information.
Yeah,
that means that there's somebody actively working to keep that man innocent.
As you know, to keep the certain, just small but crucial pieces of information not around.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we see, and we keep on referring to it, because it's such a similar case of false incarceration for an extended period of time based on false evidence, falsified evidence, and questionably acquired witness testimony, right? Like, the shit with the blood in the Stephen Avery case, shit with that blood file, when they opened it and it was fucking punctured because they wanted to smear blood all over the inside of the car. Like, when that's between episode 7 and 8. And episode 7 leaves on the cliffhanger, and episode 8 tells you. And I was like, that's the fucking, let him out of jail. Like, that was it for me. And yet it still didn't work. Because there was like a coagulant in the blood and all that stuff. Like, that is the thing that... there was somebody working to keep that from the proper authorities.
Mm.
And it was a corruption in the police force that was keeping that, only for they managed to stumble on that by chance. that would have never came to light.
Yeah.
And it absolutely points towards the culpability of the law enforcement. And you're going, you did that shit. So if there's something that can't be found, it's not because it can't be found, it's because it's being hidden.
Yeah, yeah.
In a situation like this. It absolutely is. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's integral pieces of information missing there that should be able to be easily found because it's a totally fucking public case now. There's loads of people have, all these lads are writing books and they have testimony they're giving and all this stuff, telling everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet...
Here we are.
It still is as much of a mystery as it was the day those young lads were found in the ditch.
There's child abuser murderers out there somewhere who are just...
Could be living in the same house they were living in when it happened.
Which is fucked up.
Fucked.
Which is very fucked up.
So if anybody out there knows anything, don't fucking tell me about it.
It's sick enough as it is.
I don't want that kind of responsibility. You'd be surprised what kind of emails I get, Cormac, like, talking about, like...
Who shot JFK?
Something a little bit more tangible. I guess some, questionable fucking stuff.
Do you get stuff you should be reporting?
No.
Not yet, anyway. Well, I'll send you a mail later on. I don't
know. Hey, it took two pictures to fit that in. That's impressive. No, it's just some of the stuff you get, you're like, fuck, man. Like, how... It's not something I should be reporting, but it's something that I wish I didn't really know went on. Like, there's some fucking odd stuff.
Elaborate.
No. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it on any show, in private or in public. Like, it's stuff between me and the person that sent it to me, and they're going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, nah, man. It's not for me. Like, that's not what my show is about. I'm not an investigative journalist or anything.
You could
like
be,
that.
Though. This could be your calling.
No, I don't think so, man. It's not for me. Like, it's too much pressure, and there's too many...
Loads of money in it, though. You get to feed off people's emotions and say, you're on a lead, but you need 5 more grand. Just keep doing that for years and you're sort of, you could be on a beach in Kuala Lumpur, or they don't have any beaches, but you could be on a beach somewhere. And
it's not for me, man. Like I'd rather just look at evidence that's already been gathered and speculate and try and, you know, do Bill Cosby impressions and stuff like that. That stuff to me is like, I'm going to be going to America. I'm going to be trying to find, like, talk to the people who are doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever conspiracy theory that I'm going to be investigating or some kind of a topic, I want to go to America and be with those people and go, like, tell me this and tell me that, but making a conversation. I'm not writing any fucking, spotlight. I'm not writing that shit. That's not me. I don't want that shit. But at the same time, when you notice this stuff goes on, you're seeing this stuff, like, being reported. You watch when Trump got elected and he put down almost 1,000 pedophiles within the first 2 months.
Did he?
He put out task forces that were also, they were in places that the Clintons were visiting on their post-election. I swear to God.
What a cunt.
In the places that the Clintons were visiting.
They were arresting pedophiles.
Rings of dozens, if not hundreds of pedophiles. I think there was like 400
do you
something
think,
pedophiles.
Would you think he was trolling the Clintons over that pizza shop sex scandal ring crack?
Quite possibly. Like, there's no evidence that links Hillary Clinton to anything that went on in the Pizzagate thing. John Podesta was...
No, but she has got... Hillary Clinton's past is far... Not shadier than a ring. But it's fucked up. Are you a fan of Christopher Hitchens?
Yeah.
He wrote a book, but he hated the Clintons. Hated them with a passion. Yeah. And he wrote a book on...
very powerful people. Like,
He wrote a book on all of their... And he wrote this book years ago. You know, like 10 or 15 years ago. And he wrote it all on how... And I think it's like House of Cards based on them as a couple. And I just found it fascinating. And there's another amazing story about young guys who got murdered in Arkansas.
The Clinton body count, yeah.
There you go.
There's a whole
another
lot of stuff.
Another journalist there recently.
A whole lot of stuff
in
going
the last
on in Arkansas.
2 weeks.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Oh. Sure, the whole Seth Rich thing and all that from WikiLeaks. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on with that. I mean, there's real shit happening. And it's being hidden behind,
fake news.
Hand gestures, fake news. All this
NFL
shit.
NFL players.
Lads kneeling down. Who gives a fuck, like... There's real shit going on.
Yeah.
And this is the real shit. And it's still sitting out there, like, plain as day, going, and the lads are waving a pedo flag and going, you will never, never, never catch us.
Mm.
If indeed it was something to do with a pedophile ring, if it wasn't just like an out and out murder of three kids. But the motive makes it really important. And because we can't put our finger on the motive,
it's really frustrating.
It's really frustrating to be able to find a narrative. But we are doing as much as the prosecution was doing, trying to put a satanic sex ritual narrative on what those kids were doing.
Something that, to be honest with you, something that we would buy 100% and kind of sit uncomfortably and go, you know what, now I'm going to push this in here.
It's like confirmation bias wedge, all the stuff.
Oh, God, we've been drilling it in. It's like, you know, you have your, you set your stall out, and, you know, the more pieces of information you can put under to solidify your point of view.
But sure, that's all a prosecution or defense attorney would do. But, like, to know the actual truth, I think it will never come to light.
Do you not think so?
I don't think. I can't, deathbed confessions, they're fucking dime a dozen these days. All those cunts that were working in the 50s, 60s and 70s for the CIA, they're all in their 70s and 80s and 90s now. There's a lad on a deathbed a month ago confessed that he was the lad that killed Marilyn Monroe. Like, there's lads out there all over the shop confessing on deathbed
and
confessions.
It's so easy to discredit.
It's just nothing. It's not even news, like. And yet this guy was like, it was my life's work to let you know this. Blah! And it's all like, yeah, okay.
Say bye.
Marty's dead. Yeah, of course. That's all it is, man.
Do you know what I think it is as well? The one problem works both ways, is it's so easy to foster doubt in someone's mind.
Absolutely.
And that is the unraveling of everything. Now, I know it says reasonable doubt, but you know what I mean?
To be that reasonable.
That's what I mean. Like, you can doubt that these kids did it, or you can doubt, like, you know what I mean? You just put that into them, that, oh, they're innocent kids, but you drop in a satanic ritual, and as soon as you start to doubt them as people, that grows legs. And
but because Damien Eccles was silent for most of the court proceedings,
and he didn't look empathetic, and he didn't look like he gave a fuck.
His character, yeah, absolutely.
He looked like a young Marilyn Manson who was raging against the establishment and blah blah blah. And you don't want to like that guy. You can't like that guy.
He wasn't likable, and that's why when you're going into court, you're supposed to dress in a nice suit, smile and nod, and say thanks very much, Your Honor, and lick his hole, because you want to seem approachable because it makes you seem more innocent. Damien Eccles was like, I'm going down for this. I didn't do it. I'm going down for it. Nothing I can do about it. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And he'd stand up. He'd be chewing gum. He'd have his feet up on the table.
Very flippant.
He was acting the fucking bollocks.
I didn't give a shit. Like,
do you know what I mean?
Moody teenager he was.
Yeah.
Moody goth teenager, the moodiest.
But he got to work on that in solitary confinement for 10 years. He wasn't so moody when he came out. Like,
he got to look inside because there was nowhere else to look.
I'd love to see, like, modern interviews of him now, when you put all the stuff together and have him on a show like this talking about, so they say you did this, how did that transpire? Can you imagine being him and knowing that you didn't do it and not talking about it on every TV show all day, every day, making a podcast like the OJ book, you know, If I Did It or whatever, like, to make a podcast or a YouTube channel as Damien Eccles and go, come here, listen, you know, such and such a lad. This is the lad that could have done it. This is the lad that could have done it.
He's written two books since he's come out, I know of, at least.
And do any of them point to any of the suspects that we mentioned in the show?
No idea. I'm not sure.
Okay, so we're going to go and read them and find out what the crack is. There's a lot more that could be said about this case.
We could be here, like, for hours, days.
That's basically the outset. I'm going to put up on the VidMe site, I'm going to put up the documentaries West of Memphis and
Paradise Lost.
Paradise Lost is the other one. And that Paradise Lost is a little bit...
There's three episodes of it.
Yeah, it's a little bit more detail as to the murders and the older footage. And then the West of Memphis is basically the journey towards freedom and, you know, Eddie Vedder interviews and trying to get the lads out. The Paradise Lost thing is like, was done while they were in jail with absolutely no hope of release.
Yeah, it's much more, it's a little bit more depressing, I think, when you watch that. Because there is no even...
Grim.
Pretty grim, you know, because you have making a murderer that is moving towards some sort of appeal and release.
Yeah,
I know that doesn't have an outcome either, but Paradise
Lost is one of those like early 2000s. Just here's the gory details of this crime case.
Don't
basically
be looking to feel happy after watching.
No, leaves no sunshine.
Nope.
So if any of the stuff that we said here is incorrect, I'd love you to correct us or give us some right information. info@thoseconspiracyguys.com. We also have loads of social media. So it's Facebook. Those Conspiracy Guys. Twitter is @TConspiracyGuys. We're on Instagram, Pinterest, Reddit. We also have the VidMe as well, that are going to have all the documentaries on it, so you can go and have a go at that. And the documentary should be up this week. I'll leave a link on the social as well. And for those of you that want to support the show, please do, keeping the lights on and the bellies full of biscuits and tea. You can go on to patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys and drop $2. That'll get you in at the ground floor. And if you wanted to drop any more, there's incrementally increasing tiers of sadness. No, tiers of joy. No, tiers of rewards that you
loneliness.
Get back. You get behind the scenes videos, you get unreleased vlogs that I'm making here at home just for the Patreon folk. You also get to join in on live chats, and when we have guests and stuff in the near future, you'll be able to join in and ask them questions. If you're not a Patreon, you don't get to ask. So hit it up, patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys. Join the community. We also have a Discord server, so if you jump on that, you'll be able to get in with all the cool guys. So the lads from None Under Fake Newscast, Johnny from Disaster Artists, and all the other cool kids hanging out there, like Christine, Rachel, Crew Dave, Paul Rob, the TTWA, what up? And all of these other motherfuckers hanging out in the Discord. Having the crack. It's a great community. The people are all cool. And if you want to talk about anything to do with conspiracies, or indeed like comic books or travel or anything like that, jump into Discord and have the crack with them. We are planning a USA trip. That is the thing that is on my mind. We've just finished up season 5. We're just about to start season 6. And between now and next September, seasons 6, 7 and 8 are going to be produced. We have all the episodes all laid out. Have them laid out for years, boss. Like the Voynich manuscript. But this stuff is kind of really taking shape. And I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of the lads that have joined me on the show. And some of the guests that have made some of the most memorable podcasts for most of you when you're listening for 5 fucking hours at a time. It's really appreciated that you're still tuning in and making this show in the top 100 in the US podcast charts, and in the top, I think, 20 today in Ireland, as far as I know from recording. That's it for this episode of Those Conspiracy Guys. True crime. This is a little bit of a long one and a little bit of a kind of a speculative
apologies,
what the fuck happens.
Apologies if we ran on too
not
long.
At all, man. These motherfuckers are 5 hours in. They're like, give me more. This is the West Memphis Three. There's not a whole lot to grab onto. But the stuff that we could find is there now in front of your face.
And obviously,
please look for yourself.
I think a lot of people have probably seen the documentary.
Yes.
And if they haven't, go watch them again. I know I want
please
to because
look
I've
for
got
yourself.
The itch for the West Memphis 3 now.
Watch that fucking Hobbs guy. Watch that John Mark Byers, the father. Like, watch those guys. Like, there's some shit going on there, man. I'd love to know about that. That Morgan guy and Morgan and Holland that went off to California. I'd fucking love to know about that shit. And then joining me in the studio, thanks very much for joining me, a stalwart, those conspiracy guys guest to come in the future. I hope you'll join us again, will you?
If you'll have me back,
I absolutely love that. You're a microphone professional. You're coming on the show in season 6 or 7 to talk with us for 5, 6, 7 hours, something like that.
Definitely.
You can pick your.
I'm gonna start training for it now.
You can pick your poison. We'd pick aliens or ancient civilizations or religion.
I've
a show on Mormons coming up in season 6. Would you like to do that one?
I'm something juicier.
Okay. Mormons pretty juicy, man. When you get down to it, we'll see. I'll show you the list.
What about reptilian shapeshifters who live on the moon? Please.
Dimension jumping.
That's what the Obama
alien
is.
Alien pedophiles.
Sex rings with aliens who are interbreeding with the bloodlines because they live in the fourth dimension, just out the human spectrum.
That's what it is, breeding us out. Join us in the studio, Cormac Moore from the Project 10 podcast. Cormac, thanks a million for joining us.
No worries, man. Absolute pleasure. And congratulations on the success of the podcast.
Thanks very much, man.
No worries, man.
It's
well deserved.
It's tough. You're coming from a radio background, and lots of people had your ear. For a long time, and podcasting ain't no fucking joke, son.
It's not a joke, and it's just like anything and everything. You think like look at a breakfast show, it's only 2 or 3 hours long, but it's not, because you've got prep before, during and after. And the same with a podcast, you want to put an hour show together, it takes
10 hours
but
more.
Everything that you whether it's video, audio or anything, it just takes hours before and after to get it ready, to get it right, to edit it and to do a pain in the hole. So
but this is the fun piece.
This is the great fun piece.
This is the fun piece.
And thanks a million for having us on.
No worries,
you've built
man.
Up a massive audience because people love this shit.
I want to put that genuine vibe out there. I don't want to have any spin. If I'm saying it means I really mean it, but I reserve the right to change my mind, and a lot of people don't do that. Like, if somebody comes along and goes, I think you're wrong and here's why, and I agree with that,
change
my mind. Yeah. And the ability to change your mind, lads, and I'll leave you with this, the ability to change your mind is a fucking gift. If you don't have that, learn how to do it. Because otherwise you're just going to get stuck making the same fucking stupid mistakes.
Life's going
to
be pretty fucked up for
fucked. Yeah. It's really tough. Survival of the fittest is bullshit. Because people misunderstand what it means. It's not the best that will survive.
It's the best suited for the environment.
It's the best that are able to adapt to your environment, man. So if you can't change, just give up. You know,
learn
how to change.
De-evolve yourself out of the world. And thanks very much.
So tell us about Project 10 then before we go.
Yeah, it's a 10-part podcast documentary style series. So it's kind of covering topics from legalizing drugs and seeing what that have a positive benefit on reducing violent crime, influencer marketing, and what the hell is it? I don't really like it. And then things like are robots and artificial intelligence going to take your jobs?
Savage.
And I'm in the middle of that one now. And the research that I'm doing at the moment is terrifying. Yeah. As in, it is...
Oh, well, get ready, man. You'll be putting on a tinfoil hat before your fucking no time.
And it's happening right now, it's hilarious. And one of the things that came over that there's certain industries and professions that I didn't think would ever be automated, but sports journalism is being done by machines that have universities, and financial journalism. So there's hundreds of thousands of articles.
It's all algorithmic. It's the same names. It's, you have the fucking... The scores and the stats can all be automated. Like, it's all...
That's fed into a system.
That's it, man.
Natural language has gotten there.
Throw a few... What's the Google woman? Siri. So Alexa or Siri or whatever. Yeah, it's just bop it in. You say some stuff. Throws a few nouns and verbs in. And
do you know what actually... Before we go on too much about this, I found this absolutely hilariously crazy, right? There's a service in America called WorkFusion. And it goes into a company. The service goes into a company and it's like a consultancy firm. And they figure out what are your routine tasks that you're doing, okay?
And they automate them.
Then they find the jobs that currently cannot be automated, right? So what they do is they take the workforce and they outsource that to a lower country, so somewhere in the Philippines or India. So they take, let's say your job is edit audio or to script stuff, and they say we can't currently automate that because we need a human. They set you up on, so they outsource your editing job. Just it may not be editing,
like,
but for
take
example,
bulk work packages and outsource them to a cheaper workforce.
It's your cheaper workforce in Southeast Asia, right, or wherever it is. No, but the hilarious thing at the time is the workers,
globalism, everybody.
The workers who sign up for this, right? So you outsource it to the people in India, let's say, for example. They're all part of this work fusion system. All of their keystrokes is logged. So what they're
it's a learning mechanism.
So what they're doing is, by doing the work, they're teaching the automation machine how to do their job. So while they're getting outsourced work,
they're doing themselves out of a job.
They're training the machine on how to automate the work that currently couldn't be automated. And then that's automated, and then bye-bye workforce completely.
That is amazing.
So yeah,
like, my businessman head is going, yeah,
I know, but then it's good. So more people like that are gonna. I was chatting to an MIT professor
last
week.
Crazy, interesting.
MIT professor last week from IBM, who's lecturing on the stuff, and he's more optimistic about it. But a lot of people are like, we're all fucked.
I think the guys like Elon Musk, and we talked about this before in our simulation theory episode. Guys like Elon Musk and stuff are saying, beware. You know, the Ides of March, like, some shit's going to go down if you let AI take over.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see the damage that it could potentially do, but also, like, you know, stuff gets done essentially for nothing because it's all automated. And the stuff like universal wage leaves time for automated tasks to be done because people aren't so involved in that menial labor, which eliminates the working class. And puts everyone into a middle class situation, takes away from all of the poverty at the lower end of the spectrum, because all of those menial jobs are all taken care of. And then people can concentrate more on, like, family and life and creativity and living.
One of the kind of solutions is apparently for universal basic income. But the problem is, there used to be a link between productivity that employees would have to...
Right.
The link, productivity and, let's say, company revenue and output was linked. But now companies are getting more profitable and employees' share of the wages is declining.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all fucked. We might be on fuck. I don't know. Who knows? But I'm working on that at the moment, and that'll be
after
up
an
soon.
Episode on West Memphis 3. It's a little bit more positive, but still pretty fucked.
We're pretty grim.
That sounds really interesting, man. If you want to listen to Cormac's show, that's Project 10. So it's on project10podcast.com at P10podcast.
Yep, correct.
On Twitter. And if you want to follow him just for japes, gaffs, laughs, goofs, and you know, all those other kind of good times, at Cormac Comedy on Twitter, and same on Facebook, I guess. Yeah.
Beautiful, yeah, awesome it sauce. Is indeed. Thank you very much.
So thanks very much for listening. This has been Noel's Conspiracy Guys. My name's Gordon.
I'm Cormac.
And thanks for listening. This has been West Memphis 3. Get in touch if we got anything wrong, please. This is a crazy case. We'll be looking at it again.
Was it four? See you now. Bye-bye.